am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is August 31st, 2008. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's subject from the website of Winston Wu, famed skeptic debunker, argument number 10 regarding paranormal and supernatural phenomena aren't possible because they contradict all known natural laws gained from science. And he is going to argue against that point. Argument number 10 from Winston Wu. First of all, he says, natural laws as we define them are based on our interpretation of empirical testing and observation. Therefore, they are subject to constant change as new discoveries are found which challenge or contradict our models. Throughout history, we have constantly updated and expanded our understanding of the laws of how the universe works. In the past, it was said that things like heavier-than-air flight and going to the moon were impossibilities. Skeptics of those things were proven wrong, of course. At one time, according to the law of aerodynamics, a hummingbird shouldn't be able to hover. Yet it did. So we had to figure out why and revise our laws of aerodynamics. When Albert Einstein discovered that light travels at a constant speed. Winston, I have to interrupt you here. Einstein did not discover that light travels at a constant speed. That fact was accepted by scientists more than 200 years earlier. Winston goes on, and formulated his theory of relativity and postulated that gravity involves distortion of space. All these things contradicted the Newtonian laws of physics at the time, yet they were eventually validated. Winston, that is how science works. Giants standing upon the shoulders of giants. In such a world of heroes, why would anyone, Winston, choose to be a midget? Winston says, as of now, special relativity and quantum mechanics are at odds with each other, and physicists are seeking a grand unified theory to unite them both. Winston, special relativity and quantum mechanics are not at odds with each other. They operate in entirely different dimensions. To use one of your favorite terms, quantum mechanics only applies at the subatomic level. Relativity applies on the galactic scale. The grand unified theory you mention is meant to unite all physics, not just the two you mentioned. Winston continues, as history has shown, we constantly update and expand our laws of physics to fit the data, not deny the data and new discoveries just to protect our beliefs. Winston, you forgot about your beloved religion, which does exactly that. Winston continues, in fact, new discoveries in quantum physics each year are shattering the materialistic, reductionist view we had of the universe, making psychic phenomena and other dimensions more plausible. Did I really write that? Winston, you would sell your one good testicle if only that were true. Nothing discovered in quantum physics makes psychic phenomena and other dimensions more plausible. He continues, these include the non-locality, meaning distance and space don't exist, of twin particles. No, Winston, distance and space are existing just fine as they always have. It is only in your imaginary world where anything is possible. Listeners should go to my website at theskepticarena.com and click on the link to quantum physics, where a real physicist, not a Winston Wu, will explain the details of that experiment that Winston is referring to. Then it will become clear how Winston and his band of believers have twisted what they cannot comprehend into support for their magical beliefs. Winston says, string theories that postulate several other dimensions beside our own. Winston, it's still only a theory. No proof yet. He goes on, the discovery that particles behave differently when observed, making psychokinesis more probable. Winston, how does particles behaving differently when observed have anything to do with making psychokinesis more probable? I believe that is what we call wishful thinking. He says, each new discovery seems to prove the skeptics wrong and moves us further from their views and closer to metaphysical paradigms. Winston, each one of those discoveries were nothing more than misrepresentations or misunderstandings on your part. Nothing has moved science closer to metaphysical paradigms except in your imagination. He goes on, this is obviously not a good sign for their case. It appears that the skeptic camp is a sinking ship that one should get off to avoid embarrassment. Winston, you were never on that ship to begin with. You've been in a little rowboat without any oars the whole time. Winston goes on, just the discovery alone in quantum physics that all matter is a form of vibrating energy makes paranormal and psychic phenomena much more plausible and understandable. Winston, like all true believers, you accept theory as proven fact when it is what you want to believe. It is not proven science yet that matter is vibrating energy. If and when it is proven to be so, that will still do nothing for the belief in paranormal and psychic phenomena. Those subjects will require proof, just as the vibrating energy theory requires proof. Winston adds, finally, good theories try to unify the data. Winston, that was a very stupid statement. The object is not to make things the way you want them to be, but to find out how they really are. If the data is unified in the process, fine. If not, then that's the way it is. Deal with it. Winston goes on, as Ron Pearson notes in his article, Theoretical Physics Back Survival, theories make sense of the experiments and show how apparently unrelated phenomena are aspects of the same thing. Good theories provide unifications. Winston, gravity is a pretty good theory, and it unifies nothing. He goes on, for example, magnetism and electricity were separate fields when science was in its infancy. As understanding grew, it was found that magnetic effects could be produced by electric currents, and the converse also applied. Now we speak of electromagnetism as a single force, one of the four forces of nature. Winston, this is what I was telling you earlier when I stated that unification involved more than just relativity and quantum physics. He goes on, theoretical physicists hope ultimately to join these by a unified field theory arising from a single superforce. Winston, be aware that hope and reality are not always the same thing. Now let's go to argument number 11 from Winston Wu, which is unexplainable does not mean inexplicable. Winston, my dictionary says that they are synonyms. Whatever differences there might be between them would not be enough to change the fact that synonyms have the same meaning. Winston says, this phrase is emphasized by arch-skeptic Michael Shermer, author of Why People Believe Weird Things. Winston, I can tell when the hair on the back of your neck is sticking up like a dog ready to fight. It is when you resort to name-calling. Like all of your attack techniques, it is very childish. One of your favorite name-calling tactics is to call someone an arch-skeptic. By the way, Winston, Michael Shermer admits to being a woo-woo once himself. Some people are able to pull themselves out of the quicksand, and others aren't. Sometimes all people need is a little help. Then there are some people, Winston, who are destined to suck sand their whole lives. Winston goes on, this argument means that just because something is unexplainable does not mean that paranormal forces must have been involved. Winston, scientists never assume that paranormal forces are involved. They only exist for people in your world, Winston, in the land of Wu. Winston goes on to give a list now. He says, only that we haven't found the explanation for it yet. However, skeptics who use this should also remember that the following converses are true as well. Number one, just because something happens that they think isn't possible doesn't mean that it didn't happen. To do so would be to deny reality. Winston, that is why scientists would not deny that something which happened didn't happen. But they probably would not agree with you as to why it happened. When you don't understand or can't explain something, you insert God, or the spirit world, or other magic. When scientists don't understand or can't explain something, they search for the answers in the real world. Winston gives number two. Just because something happens that they think isn't possible doesn't mean that it must be due to misperception, fraud, or hallucination. Winston, those might be good explanations. Misperception, fraud, and hallucination are all possible explanations for unexplainable events. However, if none of these three are present, then scientists will usually get to the bottom of the problem if given enough time. And they will do so without having to resort to magic. Winston gives number three. Just because a natural explanation hasn't been found for something unexplainable doesn't mean that only a natural explanation could exist. Winston, until you can prove otherwise, the only explanations that have ever been found are, in fact, natural explanations. Number four. Winston says, if a natural explanation doesn't explain all the facts, that doesn't mean that you should insist on it anyway, just to protect your belief system. Winston, it means that scientists will keep working on the theory until they learn more about it. It may turn out that they have to discard the theory in favor of a better one, or they may find corroborating evidence for the current theory. But one thing they have never had to resort to is magic. Winston says, take the following example. In the reincarnation cases investigated by Dr. Ian Stevenson in his book 20 Suggestive Cases of Reincarnation, none of the natural explanations account for the data and facts of the cases, such as babies and children having accurate, detailed memories of their past lives, which couldn't have been obtained in their environment, but are later verified to be true. Winston, I've said it before and I'll say it again. You are every salesman's dream. He goes on, Dr. Stevenson concludes that the reincarnation hypothesis best fits the data he personally investigated. Winston, it's hard to believe that this guy actually earned a doctorate. It just goes to show, no matter how much education you give a person, it doesn't guarantee they'll be smart. Winston says, though the skeptic is free to insist that a natural explanation must be the culprit anyway, and often does, he does so by flatly denying the four converse rules above. Winston, those would be the four rules you just made up, right? Winston says, would Shermer approve of that, I wonder? Winston, he used to be a woo-woo. He's not anymore. And that's the end of Winston Woo for today. And the next segment is the science segment. Today's science segment are going to be interesting facts in the field of geology. Not the most exciting area for some. Still, things that maybe you didn't know about. The most abundant elements found in the Earth are 1. Oxygen and 2. Silicon. So it looks like we'll be having those computers continuing to come our way for quite some time. The deepest hole ever dug into the Earth was over 9 miles. That's 45,000 feet. And it was done by the Russians. And that would be pretty high for an airplane, so they got pretty far down there. However, in order to get to the other side, they've still got about 8,000 miles to go. Iridium. The iridium layer is the main evidence in support of the killer asteroid theory. That would be the asteroid that made the dinosaurs go extinct about 65 million years ago. The geyser Old Faithful is now intermittent due to an earthquake, but I guess they still call it Old Faithful. Quicksand. Contrary to what you see in the movies, it is nearly impossible to drown in quicksand. The Richter scale. Each 1/10 of a point on the scale represents a difference in strength of 50%. Therefore, a 4.0 earthquake is 60 times stronger than a 3.0 earthquake. A quake that is 3.4 points higher than another one, for example, if you compared an earthquake that was 6.6, like the Northridge earthquake, versus a small earthquake that is, say, 3.2, the difference in strength is 1 million times. Another geology fact from Basic Geology 101, there are three types of rocks: igneous, sedimentary, and metamorphic. The next topic is half-lives of radioactive elements. Radioactive elements are those that are elements that have isotopes, in which case the number of neutrons within the nucleus varies from the normal number. This use of radioactive elements to date rocks is called radiometric dating, and it began in 1911. It changed the face of geology, and just about every other science, since all of them are interested in dating. Some of the elements that are commonly used are, and I'm going to give these in increasing order of how long their half-lives are. A half-life is the amount of time it takes for an isotope to decay from a radioactive element into a stable element. So if you have X amount of isotope, then in a certain number of years, half that amount will be gone. That's how radiometric dating works. They measure the amount of the isotope that has decayed. In the case of carbon-14, one of the most famous elements used for radiocarbon dating, it decays into nitrogen-14. It has a half-life of 5,730 years. And for that reason, it is not useful for determining the age of objects greater than about 50,000 years old. If you need to determine the age of older things, such as rocks and fossils, the next longest one that I have, well, there's a lot, but the next one on my list, this is a brief list, is uranium-235, which decays into lead-207 in 704 million years, which pretty much covers all the multicellular life on Earth. Now, for dating rocks and things older that predated all of the multicell life and went back to the time when the Earth only had single-cell life, we use elements like samarium, potassium, uranium-238, thorium, and rubidium. Samarium will decay to neodymium in about a billion years. One of the most popular methods is potassium-40 decaying into argon-40. It has a half-life of 1.25 billion years. Uranium into lead, 4.47 billion years, which happens to be almost identical to the age of the Earth. However, some of these isotopes take even longer to decay. Thorium-232 decays into lead-208 in 14 billion years, which happens to be about the age of the universe. But the champion is rubidium-87, which decays into strontium-87, and the half-life of that isotope is 48.8 billion years. It's going to be around for quite a while. And that wraps up the science segment, and now the arena goes abroad. Today we go to the UK, where the title is Tony Blair Opens Up the Huge Alms Bag. British ex-premier Tony Blair has launched his Tony Blair Faith Foundation in New York on May 30th, 2008. The ambitious charity is seeking hundreds of millions of dollars of funding to rescue religion and sell it as a force for good. I'm just kind of confused why you have to rescue religion when 75% of American is Christian. I don't know. I don't understand that one. But I like the idea of selling it as a force for good, because for too long it's been used by evil people as a force for evil. And it'd be nice that if they could make it a force for good, like I think it's designed to be. I'd like to see them pull that one off. Continuing with the article, the focus of its activities will be on interfaith dialogue. After 9/11, a bestseller in the Western world. That's a very good sign, because religious fundamentalism does not tolerate other religions. And if he's trying to start dialogues with other faiths, that indicates that tolerance may, in fact, be on the way, which would be great. Great news for everyone. The article goes on, with its headquarters in New York and an interfaith dialogue and conference center in London, the new charity is, according to Tony Blair, doing reasonably well in raising money in both places. Supporters speak of tens of millions of dollars in initial funding. Tony Blair had been reticent about his religious ambitions while he was prime minister, not to alienate Britain's largely secular society. Once his then-spokesman Alastair Campbell told reporters, "We don't do God." Well, that was really upfront and honest, wasn't it? But his biographer, Anthony Seldon, described him as a profoundly religious figure, whose faith had always been a major influence on his politics. Last year, Blair told TV chat show host Michael Parkinson he had prayed to God when deciding whether to send troops into Iraq. Well, that's comforting. In December, he converted from Anglicanism to Roman Catholicism. Now, that's a pretty big change. The Vatican, says Blair, is very supportive of his new interfaith venture. Well, I'm going to wish him luck on that. I would like to see that. I would like to see more tolerance among the religions. And now for the final section of the show, famous skeptical quotes. Today's hero is Douglas Adams, born March 11, 1952, died May 11, 2001, at the age of 49. He was an English author, comic radio dramatist, and a musician. He is best known as the author of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. Hitchhikers began on radio and developed into a trilogy of five books, which sold more than 15 million copies during his lifetime, as well as a television series, a comic book series, a computer game, and a feature film that was completed after his death. Adams also originated the idea for the computer game Starship Titanic, which was produced by a company that Adams co-founded and adopted into a novel. His fans and friends also knew Adams as an environmental activist, a self-described radical atheist, and a lover of fast cars, cameras, the Macintosh computer, and other techno-gizmos. The biologist Richard Dawkins dedicated his book, The God Delusion, to Douglas Adams, and in it described how Adams came to understand evolution, consequently becoming an atheist. And the quote from Douglas Adams, "I'd take the awe of understanding over the awe of ignorance any day."
Are you ready, Bruce? Don Walker.